quieren.
Now to begin a new malacha, it's a fairly short malacha, but there is some complexities to this malacha. And that is the malacha of Zoreh, not the malacha of Zoreah, but the malacha of Zoreh. So Zoreh means to, when we turn to Adit, it means to winnow. I wouldn't know what winnowing was if I saw it, but it has something to do with throwing something up to the wind. That basically you take the grain that has different parts to it, some of the parts of the grain are good, some of the parts you don't want, and if you throw it up into the wind, so somehow the wind separates certain parts of the grain, now it becomes edible. So just in case you exactly know what the malach is, that's wonderful, because I don't, but that's pretty much what it is. It's something to do with the Zohar. So the Gemara raises a question, a very important conceptual question, about the very essence of the malach of Zohar. Why should anybody ever be chayav for the malach of Zohar? He's not really doing the malach. The wind is really doing the malach. So this should almost fall into the category of what's called grama. Grama basically means when I set up some kind of a process, but my participation is very indirect. So something happens, different opinions exactly how to define grama, and as the Shabbos goes on, we're going to hopefully come back to this a little bit later. But grama is different from malacha b'yadayim in the sense that it's literally not b'yadayim, but there's some other factors, some other either time delay or some other kinds of factors that cause my action to be no longer direct, and that would not be a malacha d'oraisa. And the problem is that every Zohar seems to fall into that category. Every Zohar seems to be, in a sense, fall into the category of grama. So why is that not true? Why are you chayav for Zohar even though it appears to be grama? The Gemara in Maseches Bava Kama, actually, not even in Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara in Maseches Bava Kama, the sixth parak, has a very, very cryptic statement as to what the answer, what the solution to this problem is. And there's a major machlokes in Rishonim just what the Gemara meant. So the Rosh understood the Gemara that in Rachin Ami, that Zohar really should be grama. There's really nothing different between Zohar and any other kind of indirect action. The only problem is, but it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lamatas Malachas was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Zohar was on the list. So we have to look and see, well, why is it different from grama? The answer is it's not different than grama. It's exerce akasa, and that's the way it is. And don't ask any questions. And even though if you would do a similar type of an action or an indirect action in the other 38 Malachas, you would in fact be potter. Zohar is the exception to the rule. Ein luchav alechidusho, and therefore we can't extrapolate any grandiose rules about grama from the existence of malach of Zohar. That's just the way it is. The Torah is mechayev for Zohar, even though it probably should have been a regular grama. However, Rashi in Maseches Bava Kama Daf Samach doesn't seem to take that approach. Rashi seems to say that there is something about Zohar that is not unique to Zohar, that it really does permeate the other malachas, and it's unclear what exactly is that factor. So Rashi seems to say that what makes Zohar not a grama is because that's really what your goal is. That's what you're trying to accomplish. That's why the Gemara actually does use the phrase Malachas Machshavas Asher Torah, which Rashi seems to interpret to mean normally Malachas Machshavas is a poter. We've seen Malachas Machshavas many times in the last few months as an exemption in Hilchos Shabbos. Malachas Machshavas tells me if you did it this way and that way, the other way, you're exempt. Here, Malachas Machshavas almost makes you chayav. I mean, since this is what you're trying to do, this is what you're trying to accomplish, therefore we label your action as being your action, even though it's not really, even though it really should have been grama, but Afal Pi Kein, since that's what your kavan is, that's what your intent is, it becomes chayav. If that's what Rashi really meant to say, so that would be a tremendous chiddush and a tremendous limitation of the principle of grama. The example of grama that appears in the Gemara is if a person sees a fire, again, assuming that there's no pikuach nefesh. The post can tell us that fires bezman hazeh, house fire bezman hazeh, is considered to be an outright pikuach nefesh, and none of the games and other kunts and rules. It's not a time for the lumdus of the 16th Bar of Shabbos. After that, you just either get your fire extinguisher, you call mom and get the fire out right away. The reason why we're so machmer and fires bezman hazeh, machmer to pikuach nefesh, is because in the olden days, so houses were very, very far apart from one another. So a person had a farmhouse somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and a fire breaks out. So in theory, if you get everybody out of the house, so it's a terrible thing, the house will burn down, but it's only a month, it's not a pikuach nefesh. Whereas today, when the towns, people live in towns, live in cities, live in places so much closer, so already the post already in Europe made this realization, already in the Rishonim, they already pointed this out. We don't live out in farms anymore, we live in houses and in urban dwellings, So then if Chalila, a house fire anywhere, can burn down the entire town, so you can't take the Avtan, oh, no problem, get everybody out of the house. What about next door, what about across the street? So therefore, Bizman is there, we have to treat fires with the utmost seriousness. Even if one lives in a place that's a little bit more rural than urban, a little bit more than the suburbs, let's say, for example, a person lives in Muncie. So one can afford to live in Muncie. So Muncie, that's a Chadish in Medica Kedah. It's like the old days. We have no problem. So my house will burn down. What's the big deal? My next neighbor will live another 100 miles away. So Rabbi Ribiat, who was a Rabbi Muncie, writes in his Sefer that even in Muncie, I don't mean Bar Papa, even in Muncie, you have to be Cheshish, that sparks spread and the wind will blow things and the houses are not far enough apart for us to say with any degree of seriousness that it's actually safe to let just the house burn down. Any house fire, even in a place like Muncie, you have to call the fire department right away. So in the back of the Sefer, Rabbi Rubiat gives sources for every, that's why the Sefer is so huge. He gives sources for every single sifkat that he has a different source. So here he has a fascinating source. The source is the Rockland County Fire Department. He said they're the ones who told him that you have to write in the Sefer, that the fire is even in Muncie. But if you live in a place or you have a situation where it's really, really tachanopi kor nefesh at all, if you have a fire, it's a big problem. So you're not allowed to do fire at a job. That would be a potential issue, a key point of extinguishing a flame. So the Mishnah and the Gemara tell us that what you can do is you can put the fire out in a unique way, derech karama. Namely, you can, let's say there's a fire that's raging, and you want to stop the fire from spreading across the street. So you take barrels that are not going to be too strong, they're going to break as soon as they get exposed to the heat, and you fill them up with a lot of water, and as soon as the fire hits the barrels, it's going to smash the barrels, and the water's going to come, and it's going to extinguish the entire flame. So the Gemara says, why are you allowed to do such a game? What kind of kunst is that? The Gemara says, that's called grama. He says, that's considered to be grama, and grama is permissible. And so many of the Rishonim, when we pass in Halacha, say, grama is not outright permissible. Grama means that it's not an issur d'oraisa. It's still prohibited in the Rabbanan. And the Makom Hefsid Momon, they were matir. So the potential loss of property, they were matir grama. That's why, just parenthetically, any and every kulo grama that we use today, any kunsim that we use for grama, is only allowed to be used for situations of either Makom Hefsid or Makom Choli, or military issues, or security issues, things of that nature. Just to run your whole Shabbos, the Derech Ramos, that would be prohibited. But the Gemara does have an institution of grama. So what is the difference between the grama that the Gemara says is okay, and Zorah, which also seems to be grama, and Rashi is learning is not unique to Malacha Zobra, that what is that fundamental difference? So there are some Acharonim who point out that there's an opinion that appears in Rishonim and Shulta Gibarim in Masechet Shabbos that says that grama only applies when your intent is not really to do the Malacha. If you're really planning to do the Malacha, so your Kavan of Malacha is Machshavas HaSar Torah, that trumps any and every grama. What does that mean? In the case of the water, I don't really want to put the fire out. It's not really my goal to put the fire out. My goal is that my house shouldn't burn down. I would be more than happy if I could somehow contain the fire in some other way. If I could put up a steel wall that's just going to block the fire from getting to my property, that would be fine for me. I don't care. The fire, it's okay. But the fire continued to rage on the other side of the street. It doesn't interest me. The Torah says I don't have any practical way of doing that. So nebuch, I put up some barrels with some mortar and I play a game with a grama. But my intent is not really to get that final result. I don't really care whether the fire goes out or not. So that's the cool of grama. But if you try to pull off a grama situation and your plan is to get the result A, and you're doing it there with grama, that's a malacha d'oraisa. That's exactly what Zorah is. But according to Rashi, so Zorah is grama. It's absolutely 100% grama. It's a type of a grama. That's a malacha d'oraisa. Because your intent is to separate that grain from its bad part, even though you're doing it in an indirect fashion. There's no heter whatsoever, even on the raisa, to do a grama derech kavana. So that answer appears in one of the Gedolei Acharonim, the Shu'as Yaakov, based on this Shulchan Gibarim. This would turn the world of grama upside down. This would pretty much close down the entire Tzomet Institute, if this would be correct. Because all of the kulas of grama that the doctors use, all the hundreds and thousands of dollars that put into millions of dollars that put into all these kunsim to make the hospitals work with grama stuff and all the grama phones and the grama pens and the grama, you name it, and in the military and the army in Eretz Yisrael, they use a lot of grama kind of devices and all the grama wheelchairs and all the, from beginning to end, whether you like the grama stuff, you don't like the grama stuff, it's all done around, it's all finished, it's done. Because in all of these cases, your intent is to do the malacha. You just try to do the malacha through a derech grama. So if you would go down the route of the Shus Yaakov, the Shulchan Gibarim, you could put an end to the entire grama industry. So most of the poskim don't go down this route. We generally don't assume this way. The later poskim assume that the Shulchan Gibarim was really a das yachid. But the question, what's the answer to the question? So that if that's not the route that we want to go down to, what is the route we want to go down to? So Chaim Oizer has a tshuva, but he also addresses the same question. I mean, how could it be? On the one hand, the Gemara says Grum is okay, at least Min HaTorah. In another case, the Gemara says that Grum would be a deraisa, derech zora. So Chaim Oizer, and again, it's a one line in the middle of a tshuva, but it's a little bit unclear. Chaim Oizer seems to be saying as follows, that grumma depends just how normal that grumma is. When you see a person doing something, derech grumma, so you have to ask yourself, is this a normal way of doing something, or is this a crazy guy's mamash b'shugah? So imagine I'd say to a person that you're putting out a fire, instead of putting out a fire with a fire extinguisher, you're filling up barrels of water in the bathtub, and you bring the barrels over here, and then the barrels are being extinguishing the fire. So you look at such a person and say, that's not the normal way of doing things. Now, you have to be very careful because you don't want to make it too happen. You don't want to make the guy a big mishuga. He's a half mishuga. Because if he's so crazy what he's doing, then it's a malach kol yachayad. So that would be a guilty of overkill. So it's not really kol yachayad. It's not like riding with your left hand. It's not like carrying your hat. It is normal, but it's not normal enough to say that it's really normal. So that's a very hard hagadah, exactly where that. Again, it's a one-liner in the middle of the tshuva. The Chaim Oizer was asked to write a kuntres, to write an entire essay about electricity in Shabbos. This was a hot issue, no pun intended, back in the 1900s. And the Chaim Oizer, the Gaon Dov, was being pestered to write a whole a whole piece dedicated to why you're not allowed to use electricity in Shabbos. And they wanted him to publish it in a Torah journal, like a fairly common Torah journal. I'm not saying that people Shabbos morning were going to be walking around with it, like it's published in our shuls, things like that, but it was it would be something that the Hamon Am, that most people would have access to. And the Chaim Oizer writes that he didn't want to write it because he knew that there were still some people who were still trying to hapachanik, still trying to make a case that electricity is permissible on Shabbos. And nobody except the Roller Gedolik Belskim who dealt with the issue all concluded that it was absolutely awesome, it mattered in a shadow. There was a Mechlekes, why it's awesome? Some said it's a bar, some said it's a bishul, some said it's Molitz, half a dozen reasons why it's awesome. But no competent poster came to the conclusion that it was mutter. So there are some people who were chepering, people who are still today. So if they would live in today's world, they would be the bloggers. And they would just stop the Michigan. So there were people who were trying to drive everybody crazy and still tell, we haven't closed the issue yet. And it's still an open issue and there's still room for discussion. The same pismen that we read in today's world. So in the early 1900s, they talked about those kind of things also. So they still wanted to discuss the issue. Chaim Oizer wasn't interested in dealing with the people who were Michigan. So he writes in the beginning of the tshuva where people were trying to get him to write a kuntres, he writes, what's the goal of my kuntres? Everybody who trusts us, I don't trust the Tamid Chacham, know that it's also. Anyone who still wants to discuss it are people who just want to stop make trouble. If I'm going to write a tshuva giving you 10 reasons why it's also, so some guy is going to write another quote unquote tshuva in response and say, no, that reason isn't right, that reason isn't right. That reason. So they're going to keep the issue going, keep the issue burning, keep the issue hopping around a little more. He says, it's already been decided, it's already over, finished, shun gemara. So he said, if I write it, if the Tamid Chacham, if I write a little shtickle Torah that no one else is going to read. So I said, but what do I have to write that for? I said, no one's going to read it anyway. It's from Marashah. So there's no reason for me to be mafarsis. So I'll just write the one quick thing. He says that everybody knows what electricity in Instagram is. Instagram, you're not allowed to use electricity in Shabbos. And then in like three lines, he gives you one or two marmakomis. If you can also understand the marmakomis anyway. So this marmakom is one that talks about grumma. He raises the question, when you press a button, is that called the grumma? So he says, no, it's not. For sure not. And he says, I am Rashi Shabbos. I am Samach, I am this, I am that, and that. Bechuli, bechuli, bechuli. So it's a hard chew because he didn't want anyone to understand it. So he succeeded. No one understands. What he meant. But anyway, you see something fascinating that we think sometimes that all that we have to deal with new problems. The problems are new, but the techniques are the same. People chapter their about 100 years ago, and you have to sometimes know when not to talk back. So you have to know when sometimes it's not kedai to write tshuvas and to write gemar mekomos and to open up discussions. Because when discussions are already over, so then it's usually best just to let them die, and then people forget about them, hopefully at some point. Anyway, getting back to our story. So there is some kind of an answer to this question, why Zohar is a problem, even though Grumma should be a thirst. So either an issue of, as Chaim Oizer was describing, when it's very, very Shalok Kederach, that it's okay, when it's much more normal that it's a problem. Or like the Shus Yaakov said, the answer that we probably don't want to go down the root of, is that Grumma, whenever it's Derech Havon, is always in the Sugi Deraisa. Or you go down the simplest problem, the Gemara, like the Rosh says, that the Gemara never said anything. The Gemara said that Itaka is Grumma. That Zohar is absolute 100% of Grumma, and it's still lost because the Torah said it's also. The Torah trumps all your lumdas, because this is the exception, one of the exceptions to the law. Does the malachas ever speak to us at all? We haven't done malachas ever at all, so most of us probably don't do it out in the fields like was done in the olden days. But there is one potential issue of Zohar that if this exists, this could turn a lot of shaylas into complicated shaylas. If the issue is not true, so then the shaylas over here.
It's more of a garmia or a grama.
Well, garmia and grama are terms that we find in Ezekiel. We don't find those terms in other areas of halacha. There are some Rishonim who say that in Torah there's really no difference between those two terms. So we're not so sure we're going to find those distinctions in other areas of halacha. There is a Yerushalmi that says something about Zohra, and if this Yerushalmi is accepted, then this can open up a lot of shalas in the Zohra. If the Yerushalmi is rejected, then enjoy the rest of the donuts in early Sunday morning. The Yerushalmi says as follows. The Yerushalmi says, if a person, we're not asking anybody yet to practice this, but if the Yerushalmi says if a person spits into the wind, and it's a windy day, the wind starts to separate his spit into different directions. So that's a potential violation of the law of Zohar. Why? What does Zohar mean? Zohar means I throw something into the wind, in that case the grain, the piece of wheat into the wind, and the wind comes and joins forces with me. It starts to separate and scatter the grain apart. That's the law of Zohar. What's the difference whether I throw the grain into the wind or I throw the spit into the wind? That's considered to be the malacha of Zohar. That's at least what appears in that text of the Rishonim. So many of the Rishonim don't even quote that Rishonim. Don't even make mention of that. They still quote it. The regular poem, many Rishonim don't even quote it. But there are more does. There are more quotes. Some Rishonim will quote this Rishonim. What's the issue? Should we accept the Rishonim or not accept the Rishonim? As a general rule, what it says in the Rishonim is always accepted unless it's contradicted by what it says in the Bavli. The question is it contradicted by the Bavli? Is there any statement in the Bavli to this effect? So the only thing the Bavli says about Malach of Zohra is the Gemara in the seventh parak of Shabbos, where the Gemara says, Hainu Zohra hanavara hanamarake. The Gemara says there are three Malachas that are almost identical to one another. Zohra is throwing into the wind, so it separates. Boirer is separating. And Marake is sifting, which is also separating. So the Gemara says, why do I need three Malachas for it? They all accomplish the same thing, all different methods of separating. So the Gemara says, you're right, since each one was practiced in the Mishnah at a different stage, so somehow each one is elevated to a stage of a malacha as its own, even though conceptually they're not all that different from one another. So as we move on later on to the Shabbos and Berger Rakhid, hopefully we're going to come back to this Gemara. But from the simple reading of the Bavli, it sounds like the malacha of Zohra is not just simply throwing something to the wind and having it scatter. It's throwing good and bad to the wind and having the wind's force separating good and bad. If there's no good and there's no bad, just one entity that's scattered in different directions, that has nothing to do with the Malach HaZohra. If Yerushalmi was right, then the Bavli wouldn't have asked the question.
When you also wanted to have it happen?
Oh, okay, you're ready for Rabbi Kivei. Okay, you're ready up to Rabbi Kivei. Okay, excellent. So again, so the Yerushalmi speaks about using the force of the wind to separate items, but not separating good and bad, just simply scattering items through the wind. That's the malacha of Zohra. And therefore, you spit to the wind, even though spit is one entity, it's no bad, no good, just the mere fact that it's scattering, that's a problem. Whereas from the fact that the Bavli equated Zohra to Bar Merakhe, it sounds like the Bavli had a very, very different take on Zohra. So if you go down the route of what most Rishonim seem to say, who don't even quote this Rishami, and unless you're throwing good and bad to the wind, you really have very little to worry about. But if you go down the route of the Ramah, who's close to Rishonim, then we have a problem. So to be intellectually honest, there are some later Acharonim who say that even the Rishonim didn't say what the Ramah claimed it said. What did the Rishonim said beferish? The violation of the Malach of Zohar, if you spit to the wind. So the Mishnah Berurah and the Be'er Halacha quotes one of the Acharonim who says that the Ramah said it because he had the wrong gears of the Rishonim. You can't blame the Ramah. The most quoted from Rishonim had the words, Chaim Mishim Zohra. Mishnah Berurah said there was another reading of the Rishonim. The other possible reading of the Rishonim was, catch this one, Chaim Mishim Zorek. Now the word Zohra and Zorek are very, very, if you think about it, a hay and a kuf are very, very similar. It's just depending how much further you extend the line. You know, you're writing a hand print, somebody's writing a Rishonim really quick by hand, you know, you get a little bit of a smudge. So comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, maybe the Rishonim is not even talking about Zohra. So about Zorek, what the Rishonim would mean is, if you give a good spit, I give a real Dalarama spit, okay? Please, nobody should, don't tell your mothers this is what we're discussing. Yeah? If you give a good 7 or 8 feet to spit, so you could potentially be chai for Zorek on Shabbos. Rishonim is not even talking about Zorek. So if you hold like that, then again, take your donut and we're done. Finish your shiur. But the Ramah doesn't say it. The Ramah does go through Shami, and the Ramah claims that would be a potential violation. So it's based on this idea that potentially applying wind kind of pressure to something and simply scattering something in different directions can potentially be a malacha of Malacha Diraisa. So this raises a whole red flag. Yeah, if you're not choshes for Ramad, then we're not concerned. But if you're willing to be choshes, the Shabbat Diraisa, based on the Ramad, you're a Shami, then you have to ask yourself, well, how far does this go? So Rabbi Kineir talks about the Shabbat. He talks about, forget about spitting into the wind. What about throwing water into the wind? A person takes a cup of water and throws it in such a way that the water gets scattered. Is that considered to be a brahmana? Is that equivalent to the Rishonim? So at first glance, Rabbi Kineir says, well, according to the Rishonim, don't quote the Rishonim. Don't worry about it. But according to the Rishonim, the Ramah, and that Girsa, that is Rishum Zoreh, not Rishum Zoreh. So is the water the equivalent to the saliva? So Rabbi Kineir says, not necessarily. As a throwback to something we've spoken about in the past. Namely, we had certain malachas that we learned only apply to gedula karka, only apply to things that grow on the ground. Now, we never saw anything about Zohar. We never talked about Zohar. But it does talk about Disha. Rishonim spoke about Kotzia. We spoke about this a lot in the last couple of months. And it's very possible that Zohar follows suit. It's all part of the same preparation of the samanim, of the herbs that we use to dye the different parts of the Mishkan. So maybe one could argue, says Rabbi Kineir, that the malacha only applies to Gidula Karka, which would immediately disqualify water. Water doesn't grow on the ground. I mean, it's taken out of the river, but that doesn't grow on the ground. But then the question becomes, well, wait a second, the saliva doesn't grow on the ground either. Well, this is a throwback to what we spoke before. Saliva is part of from the human body, and human beings grow on the ground. Not really grow on the ground, but the same with the cows. Remember we saw some of Shanel, the Rambam Shita was cows grow on the ground because they eat from the grass that grows on the ground. So we eat from some of us eat lettuce, some of us eat the chocolate Dunkin' Donuts. But at the end of the day, even those chocolate donuts, they may have undergone many, many different gulgulim, but they all come from the ground. The flour came from the ground, the chocolate came from the ground, the sugar, everything came from the ground. So I didn't say they're healthy, I just said they came originally from the ground. So since all humans get nourished by things that grow on the ground, so human beings are also called the ship of gedula karka. So just because the Rishonim says that spitting is called the Zoreh, it does necessarily mean that pouring water is called Zoreh. That's what Kivega's first tells. Then Rabbi Kineir raised another question where you suggested, why is this even a malacha deraisa altogether? Is that the person's kavana? What kind of shugana cares that I'm spitting into the air, I'm pouring water into the air? Whose kavana is to separate, to scatter the droplets? The whole thing is shalom kavana. So says Rabbi Kineir, you're right. But who says that Rishonim follows the views of Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Shimon was the Tana who said, and Dov Shem Miskavin, and Loch Shetzir Laguf, all the coolers that Rabbi Shimon had, in lack of kavana, well, that was machlekes atanoim, repeated Rabbi Shimon. So maybe the only Rishonim is a shalok halacha. Maybe the Rishonim that says Yechayev is only following those unique shitas that we even possibly like in the first place. So Rabbi Kineir got a lot of pikpukim, a lot of shaylas about this Rishonim. First of all, we're not even sure. We have about four different sfeikas. We're not even sure Rishonim said it all together. The Mishnah Berurah said maybe the girsa is wrong. The girsa was zorek, not zorek. Most of the Rishonim don't quote Rishonim, so they probably held that the Babli disagreed with the Rishonim. Number three, we're not even sure it applies to things that don't grow on the ground, and which therefore wouldn't extend to water. And number four, we're not even sure that there should be any bit of a problem, because the person's intent is clearly not going to be present. Maybe Rishonim was going to be present. So the end of the Shuvah, Rabbi Kineir says, you know, you want to be choshes for Rishonim. It's one thing to be choshes for the water, with the kavanah, it's actually the karga, so far removed, he says, b'stam you don't have to be so choshes for Rishonim. So the question is, for anything left lamaisa for us? So we're going to do something we have not yet done this year in the Shabbos, so we're going to have a little bit of demonstration, a little bit of show and tell.
Are we
doctors
saying anything? Let's say someone says something indoors. Gravity is going
to... Oh, okay, excellent. Very good. Okay, good. So before I open up my bag of tricks here, so we're going to give one hanukkah. The poskim say that what's the difference... That's what brings me indoors. What's the difference between if wind is helping me along with the malacha, or what if it's air... Let's help me along the way. Again, I don't know enough about earth science. You know, so maybe some of the eighth graders know a little bit more about this, about the wind pressure, air pressure. Bottom line is that there's a force, of air / wind, it's all the same thing, that's assisting in the scattering of an item. That is the potential block of Zohar. Again, according to Rishonim. So exhibit A. Right? Come some poskim and say, all right, we'll try the... First, we have to open up the channels.
Hairspray, yes.
It's not hairspray. Okay, you're all right? Okay, watch. Okay, I won't scratch anybody. Watch what happens. When I press down, who's going to tell me what's going on inside? When I press down?
Evaporation, technically.
Pressure, air, something or other. Okay, fine. Some kind of air pressure, okay? Watch what's happening. This used to be a liquid inside, high pressure, whatever it is. It's in one unit. So, Zohar, Malacha D'Oraisa Zohar. I have, could you get there? We have to get a close-up of it. So the room is going to start to smell. I have multiple things, that's the only thing I got in here. Okay? So when you spray, you press down on pressing air, whatever that means, and I'm using air, using wind, using air pressure to force the different particles to separate. Is that in a malacha? So I can't even see exactly what's going on here. But Rav Moshe was asked the shaila, and Rav Moshe Paskin, no. Rav Moshe Paskin, that he thought this was permissible. Why? Because... Huh? Rav Moshe Paskin was okay. There was mutter. So you're allowed to use aerosol things. These guys have spray cans and shabs, they're all perfectly permissible. Even according to the Machmirim. Again, if you disagree with the Rishalmi, then talk about it. But even according to the Machmirim, we thought they were mutter. Why? He thought that Sean Bias. He thought that was Josh's cooler. That wasn't really his cooler. But Rav Moshe Paskin that it's mutter because, and again, I don't truly understand the science of it, but if you're interested, Rabbi Riviat, I think it's on page 327, if I'm mistaken, one of his sperm, you can take a look and it gives you the whole background right after he quotes from the Rothman County, by the way, now he quotes from the physics labs of Muncie or something. He quotes from all the scientists who explain to you what Rav Moshe was talking about. Explain to Rav Moshe that pretty much it's not the pressure proper that's causing the scattering, it's actually the multiple small holes that are the nozzle that's actually doing the scattering. So I don't want to call it a grum of zone, that's what we're going to call it, but it's not the air pressure proper that's causing the separation, it's something else in there that's causing the separation, and he felt that was not the thing of Zohar. So Rav Moshe was making on these kinds of sprays. However, even though Rav Moshe was making on these kinds of sprays, there are other kinds of sprays out here. And check this out, okay, hand sanitizer spray, right? So who's going to tell me what the difference is? Remember what that looked like when you sprayed it? Watch this. Who's going to tell me the difference?
There's less air pressure in the other one because you're holding it down.
Oh, okay, so it's not even less. Watch, I'm going to hold it down on both at the same time, okay? All right? I'm holding it down. I'm holding them both down. I'm not sure what chemical reaction happens in this. A nuclear reaction taking place, okay? Watch, I'm holding down both at the same time. What happened?
Continuous.
This continues going and this stops. Why does that happen?
Because of the size.
No, you have fundamentally different systems going on. One is a venturi tube or something, and one is, I don't know what any of this stuff means, but if you take a look, you'll see that they're working in a gamre different ways, physics-wise. So Rav Moshe was only talking about these. Rabbi Ribiat claims, based on his whole analysis of the story, is that this does not work with the air pressure doing the actual scattering. But anything that does not stay down by holding, anything with one spray kind of an event, so that is considered to be a cheshash of Torah, according to the Rishonim. So Rabbi Riviat is master these, and he asks these. However, wait, you have to ask yourself.
It's not pressurized, though. Small.
Right, it's a different system of Gambri, right. But it's a liquid that's scattering. A liquid scattering through direct air force. There is no little schmitschicks here that are no little holes. The different system of Gambri. And Rabbi Riviat thought this was a problem. However, let's go back to Rishonim for a second. That when do we prohibit this? Only if it meets the criteria that Rabbi Kinega said. So one of the criteria was it has to be Gedula Karta. Is this Gedula Karta?
Okay.
Purified water.
Okay.
Not bad. Lavendura. Lavender. Essential oil. Uh-oh. Alloy. Uh-oh. Glyph. Glycerin. Oh, there's a lot of Gedula Karta in this. Active ingredient. Ethanol. Ethanol is what?
Grain alcohol,
thank you very much. Let's we check. Maybe it's hard to understand, but it's fine. You can try this. Do it to the dog's nest. Okay? Bottom line is that this has a lot of Gedula Karka in it. If it has a lot of Gedula Karka, according to the Machmir, this would be a problem. However, the Fiani is Daiti. I think the Demutal Lechatchila, and I'll tell you why. Because this is better than Rabbi Kivega's case of not Kavana. Here, you don't want it to scatter. Anyone who uses these things knows that. You put it as close to your hand as possible, because if you don't, then you end up, you lose the whole thing. Then you have to buy 15 of these every week. You don't want it to scatter. You want the water, you want the liquid to get out, not to scatter in the air. Here, I don't know so much of these, but it's an air freshener in the bathroom. You want to scatter, but those are good because the way air fresheners work is the aerosol can. Those are most of another reason we use this. But these, which don't have the cooler of the aerosol can, they have the other cooler that the person really, really wants it to get as close as possible, and therefore I think they're mutl gamre. Since the whole Ramah is such a chiddushik, and the chiddushik of the chiddush, most of the Shem probably didn't agree to it, I think Lufini is that these are mutl chetchila. Not only do I think they're mutl chetchila, I think they may even be better than some of the other ones. A lot of people on... See? Okay? So this is my weekday hand sanitizer, and this is my Shabbos hand sanitizer. Okay? So many people can say these are better on Shabbos. Because they don't have any spray. So The only problem is these may be a chashash of mumarech, of smearing, of cream. So the answer is they're probably not. They're probably too thin to be that, and they disappear right away. So actually, I think Rabbi River, if I'm not mistaken, has matted these out, right? And he doesn't like these. The Fili is not the other way around. I think that these are, I'm not saying they're also in Shabbos, they're probably mutter also in Shabbos, but out of the two, I think these are better than these. So like, we have 2 cents. These are my weaker ones.
So what does one do for deodorant?
What?
For deodorant.
These are okay. No, right. These are because these are aerosol sprays. So these, I think these are perfectly okay. The stick deodorants are a problem in Shabbos. Marech problem, machin problems. But these are okay. So bottom line is that
there's
balls of pachios. So the bottom line, this all emanates from one Yerushalmi that may or may not exist. And even if Yerushalmi exists, some probably disagrees with it. And the whole thing is Lohayot Ramyon. But the Halig Ramah, but they say it's in the other one. Ramah said it. So because I don't think the Ramah, the 15 to crack out, having the wildest dreams, and we would have 3 exhibits out here. But try to make it halachah.
Based on using sanitizer food spray, let's say it has a component of make the hands.
Smell nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. This is hand fat that's lavender and aloe. Yeah, that's okay. As long as you're doing it onto your body, you can't spray this onto your clothing. Not that you would ever do that, but to be molded red into clothing is a problem. To be molded red onto your goof is more
difficult. Any
party goof? Yeah. You're allowed to put some nice fragrant smell onto your body. That's okay, Charles. You shouldn't put
it. How about women using static card?
That is a whole different story. That is a different story. It's a shout of kibbutz. We leave it. You got to come back in 6 years from now. We get that. It's not for now. Okay.
No,